This episode of the CMO Suite is brought to you by Connectivity Strategies, specializing in micro-targeted full-funnel media strategies for clients like WWE, Corona, First Watch, Coke, and more. Connectivity Strategy, national strength, localized approach. Visit them at connectivitystrategy.com and Tumi. I always throw a good shout-out to my friends at Tumi, not because they sent me cool stuff as some swag after we had Charlie Cole on as a show, but also because Charlie Cole sent me some swag. So, Tumi, product quality and selection are key attributes that have made Tumi the leading international business accessory and travel lifestyle brand. And finally, No Kid Hungry. We are also always proud that we make a contribution in the name of each of our 2019 guests to No Kid Hungry. Your tax-deductible donation helps them provide vulnerable kids in America with nutritious meals so they can focus on being kids, not being hungry. Holly, let's get this show started.
You're in the CMO Suite, the podcast for marketers who want to be in the know, presented by Connectivity Holdings.
Hello and welcome to the start of another episode of the CMO Suite. I am ridiculously happy we are still here in California. It's our last episode for this trip. We'll be back at some point a little bit later this year, but co-hosting with me is my great friend Holly Payberg. She's producing the show as well. Hi, Holly.
Hi, Sean. Hi, everybody.
From time to time, Holly, again, I keep telling you, just feel free to raise a hand and jump in. We're excited to have as our guest today Antonio Nieves. Antonio returns to ModCloth, a digitally native retailer of women's apparel, accessories, and decor as the CEO. First of all, hello and welcome.
Well, thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to be.
So I wanted to throw a couple of other things out there before we kind of jump into the thick of this. So prior to your role there, you were the COO and CFO of the rapidly expanding retailer Bonobos.
That's correct. Yeah, I spent about 18 months there.
And I love that brand. It's one of those brands that I kind of had heard of the brand, but until I ran into the brand and then I was like, oh, they've got good stuff. It's one of those kind of weird things. It is an ever-expanding, changing landscape in that industry as a whole, and I'm excited to talk to you a lot more about ModCloth and kind of what you're doing over there. And if you don't mind us going back a little bit over to the Bonobos side for just a bit, that'd be fantastic as well. And I have been told that you are a graduate of Pennsylvania State University with a Bachelor of Science degree in accounting.
Yes. Funny that you have an accounting guy on this podcast right now. I don't know what you guys are thinking.
Yeah, it must be in the water or LA. And I'll give you an interesting thing that we found out yesterday. And so you might think this is a little bit fascinating as well. You know, for this show, we started our first season last season. Jay Goodman, who you are friends with, correct?
Yep.
Who convinced you to come on the show at least a little bit.
Twisted the arm just a little bit. Not too hard, but it was...
He was a guest on, and we're actually using his facility. So if you're watching this via video on our YouTube page, you'll see that we actually have this amazing-looking office that we're in. We only wish this was our actual office. I may just try to pass this off a few times as mine because it's pretty nice. But when he came on last year, you know, it was one of those situations, again, where you're just trying to create some connection opportunities and a chance to be able to kind of push some content out there. And also at the same time, be able to give somebody a voice that maybe has not had as much of an opportunity. So we tried to really create a diverse landscape of guests. They're not all the same kind of CMO. There's some VPs and some globals. But one of the guests that we had interviewed, and again, depending on how these episodes air, because they don't always air in order like shooting a movie, one of the people that we interviewed yesterday is the CFO of marketing for State Farm Insurance. And I had never seen that title before. Mm. I thought that is really interesting. And that to speak to your point on the accounting background, as we got to talk to him just a little bit more, it was, again, one of those interesting things where finance plays just such an important part in everything that's happening from a brand's perspective at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a major transition from, like, the early 2000s, which were more, like, heavier controller accounting-based CFOs to where the industry, especially in digitally native brands, are looking for finance professionals who actually understand and comprehend the business.
Yeah.
And then every now and then we fake it enough to make them believe that we can actually run a company. And so that's where I'm at right now.
But it's great how that transformation has taken place. And I want to talk about your history to some extent because I think you've had a really interesting background, at least from what I've read and what I've heard. But it is interesting how within my lifetime, the ability to really kind of track a consumer and really truly get as close to you can to attribution modeling that consumer to some extent. It really has changed everything. And certainly retail in the clothing industry, to me, maybe almost more than almost anything.
Yeah, you know, I think it starts back to the core of brand marketing, right, for me. And I learned that at a very early age. I worked at Johnson & Johnson. And when I worked at a company where we were selling Tylenol, you sit there and you think about them as a pharmaceutical business. But in reality, what they are is a marketing business.
Yeah.
They're geniuses at taking a product that really is generic, that you can buy for half the price, but convincing consumers through an emotional connection,
of course,
that it's worth twice as much. And it's a $2.5 billion business.
Yeah.
And so then it transforms, and really that piece, doesn't matter what industry you're in, it's all about creating this emotional connection with consumers that allows you to scale these businesses. What's amazing in today's world, especially with digitally native companies and digital-based brands, is that you have the added advantage of having data
sure.
that can actually more concretely link the brand marketing and the performance marketing together versus what you couldn't have done like 15 years ago when you didn't have all this internet-based marketing that was really connecting the journey all the way
through. There was guesswork, right, yeah. to some extent. And so before we dig into that a little bit more, I want to make sure that we take some time to kind of walk backwards a little bit, talk about your history for a little bit, because, again, I think that's interesting. And then I'm going to force you to dig back into that a little bit, because we're going to talk some finance and how that mapping actually works. So where did you grow up, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, that's a long question. I was actually an Army brat growing up all over the world. So I was born in New Jersey, so I still have some Jersey pride in me. But then I went to high school actually in Seoul, Korea. And so I had a myriad of experiences. I lived in Hawaii, I lived in California, I lived in North Carolina. I've been all over the world.
Yeah. And how about your folks? Did they are they from this country, or did they come over here?
No. So I'm also so I'm biracial. My my mother's Korean, my father's Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Typical USGI. So my dad was in the service, was stationed in Korea, met my mother.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, you know, I'm one of those hybrids that most people don't hear about. Now it becomes more common, but back in the day, it was definitely not.
It's sexy now.
It is totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are we allowed to say that? That's a great part about a podcast. You can say whatever you want, right?
I mean, maybe. I don't know if I would put sexy with this, but. But, you know, overall, it's exotic.
Look, I'm an old white guy. There's nobody looking at any of this and going, oh, my God, he's so Anglo, right?
Yeah.
None of that is happening right now.
So. No, you know, I am becoming a little bit more of the norm. But growing up, you know, it was interesting because living all over the world, you see how different people react to different types of things. And brands is actually one of those things, right? How a brand in, like, the U.S. translates to a brand in, like, Korea is very different.
Yeah.
And even, like, in Europe and so forth. And it's amazing how you take all these different shared experiences and seeing how people interact from a culturally perspective and can bring that together. And now in the U.S., we're becoming so much more diversified from a population set that it actually is an advantage, I see,
sure.
of having grown up in all these different cultures, because we're just seeing that melting pot happening here.
Well, and again, regardless of whatever happens in the world of politics, it is interesting, again, as an old white guy, you know, for the last 10 years, it was kind of like, hey, you need to make sure that you understand multicultural marketing. And at that time, it meant Hispanic marketing.
Yeah.
But now, even outside of just Los Angeles, it's all kinds of cultural moments.
Yeah.
And that whole, you know, Asian element to some extent is one that there's a global part.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly out here in Los Angeles, when you look at the movie industry, you know, a lot of the marketing campaigns that they're building are built almost there first.
Totally.
In some cases, and we're kind of getting a little bit of the leftovers. Like, what do you mean the Avengers opens 3 weeks later here? What's going on? What happened to us over here?
Well, you know, and we see it like in our brand, you know, traditionally, when we think about diversity, it would be a white, you know, model and a black model.
Yeah. Right?
And for us, diversity now is of all cultures.
Yeah.
So in our campaign we did in the fall, we had Awkwafina, who starred in Ocean's 8 and Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah.
And she was one of the main people. We had an Indian model. We had, and it's diversity is expanded so much more beyond, and it's to all these different cultures that people kind of looked at as secondary markets. They're really primary markets nowadays, and that's an exciting world to be in.
Do you think it's interesting, and again, from that perspective, to talk about that just a little bit more? Again, you know, I have kids. I have 15-year-old twins, and their school's extremely, you know, multicultural at this point. And so they might see an ad campaign like that, and it just feels very natural to them. It doesn't feel staged to some extent. Like, we need to make sure we have one redhead and this over here. And so is that one of the exciting things that you feel like are happening out in the marketplace right now, that while you want to ensure that there's diversity, it's not so staged to some extent that it almost feels forced?
Yeah.
It feels very natural.
I mean, there's just a naturalness whenever you're trying to sell anything of it has to be authentic.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny for me in my background growing up in a military household where you're surrounded by all different races and so forth, seeing sometimes ad copy. And there was an example not too long ago where we had a photo of a black woman sitting down with a white woman right behind her, and he had her hand on the shoulder, and everybody was like, we can't show that. Like, it's like a white woman. And I was sitting there, I was like, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of younger kids are growing up in that. That's my hope, is that you know, we don't have to overemphasize or worry about, okay, do we have this representation, that representation? But what it comes down to, I think, is if you're really being genuine to the message and really connecting with the needs of the consumer, they'll look past that. They're not going to be overly judgy.
Yeah.
But you do want to make sure you're representing a wider swath.
And so with a ModCloth, let's jump into that then for just a second. What brought you from, had you been there before and then left to go to Bonobos and then came back? How did that trajectory work?
So I worked for ModCloth when it was still a privately owned company for 3 years.
Yeah.
And the brand was amazing. I loved it. I was so in love that I was living in Philadelphia, commuting to San Francisco every week for 2 years straight.
Oh my God. Why didn't you just move to San Francisco? Well,
I lived in San Francisco. The company, another reason why I love the company is they actually supported me. Like my father got sick. He lived in New Jersey. So they allowed me to move to Philly so I can be there on weekends.
Yeah.
And I'd fly to San Francisco to work. So an amazing experience. But after doing that for 2 years, I ultimately needed to be on the East Coast. So I decided to explore opportunities in New York, and I landed at Bonobos, which was transformative for me from a career perspective. Loved the brand. It's an amazing business. And then when both the companies were actually acquired by Walmart, I had an opportunity to come back to ModCloth into the CEO role and really kind of help take it to the next level as a business.
Yeah. And so you talked a little bit about your folks and about your dad. And so how has that role of marketing impacted how you look back at either your childhood or anything? You know, I think many of us, I'm 49. I have no idea how old you are. I'm going to guess 38. Maybe that's your club age.
That's actually exactly right.
Holly, can you believe that?
You're like...
And I'm looking at your sheet. There's no age on there. Pretty impressive.
You've got a future in the circus, Sean.
I'd love to give Google... that's true.
Let's just not... Don't guess my weight. Please don't do that. Right? No.
So I think some of us that are either coming into our 40s or people like me that are kind of coming into your 50s, you also start getting a little self-reflective to some extent of like, gosh, how much did my parents impact who I've become and what I'm doing out there? And so to kind of put a little bit of a button on your history and then spend some time kind of digging into what's going on with ModCloth right now, was there anything else about your childhood? Was there anything else about your parents kind of coming here and being here and then looking back at your dad being sick that played any impact in the decisioning process that you made or how you've kind of wanted to put your stamp on this industry?
Absolutely. I mean, I think about the fact that, you know, I want to focus actually on my mother.
Yeah.
So my mother growing up was amazing. And we moved a lot, my dad being military. He was deployed several times. He was in the Gulf War and so forth. So effectively, my mom was a single mom. And I don't think most people really, you know, we talk about celebrating and supporting our troops. And loved, absolutely believe in that. But we don't talk enough about celebrating the moms or the spouses, because it's not just moms now. I'm going to be careful here. There's a lot of fathers who stay at home while their service spouse is serving. And my mom was a single mom for a good portion of time. And so she instilled a lot of the values and drive in me to be successful. And I remember going to college and, you know, being from a military household, we didn't have a lot of the income to be able to support it. So my mom, after my dad retired, they moved to New Jersey. She took a job as a housekeeper at the Trump Plaza.
Yeah.
And then was at Showboat as a housekeeper. And I don't know if you've ever done housekeeping work. It is the most brutal job you can do. You're on your feet 8 hours a day cleaning up. And she did that to help pay for books.
Yeah.
And so seeing all the energy she put behind my career, and you sit there and you look at the fact that I'm college educated. I have a younger sister who's a doctor who's finishing up her residency, and we attribute that back to our mother. And obviously my father is an amazing person as well, and I give him all the credit too. It's a combination. It's, you know, it takes a village. So when I think about ModCloth and the vision and passion that we have around empowering women and about amplifying their voice, I don't have to look very far. I look to my mother.
It sticks there. It's in your heart.
Totally.
Yeah.
And you know, it's easy when you sit there and you see the trials. You know, we talk about wage equality. You know, we just did a post this morning around trans people's rights are just as equal as anybody else's. And the fact that we're in a society that we actually had to put those posts today still gives me and my entire company the drive to do what we do. And it's funny because you sit there and you say, well, we sell apparel, but we look at it as not just we sell clothing. We actually believe that we can be a voice for a greater impact and really help, you know, bring equality and true equality. You know, we talk about it's not just equality around race. It's around sexual orientation. It's around size inclusivity. It's about it permeates everywhere.
Yeah.
And so I really look to that, but the foundation is looking to my mother.
And so by the way, congratulations, right? You know, I came also from a family, split family. My dad was my dad, and he did what he did. He tried the best that he could, yep. And as fathers of that generation, sometimes, I don't know that the roadmap was maybe there to help as much. I do remember my mom having to have a couple of jobs to be able to try to just make sure that we could make ends meet.
Yep.
And so you look back at that and you realize that they all play that factor, but it is that mother's love sometimes
totally.
For a son, and certainly to a daughter, perhaps to some extent. I can only speak from that perspective, that it does drive you to some extent, and you want to do not just work, but you want to do good work, and you want to do work that you almost feel like, hey, can I make her proud of what I'm doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I would also add one more element, because my mother is Korean,
yeah,
and so there's a little bit of the Tiger Mom s type thing.
Yeah.
So in my mom's 4'11",
yeah,
like 95 pounds. You know, I've got a couple inches on her, and she says my full name, and I swear I could outrun Usain Bolt. Like, she literally strikes fear.
Yeah, that's hilarious. So I think one of the interesting things for me about to take an additional slant on this, and you were just talking again about the fact that with ModCloth, you know, you guys are talking to women of all colors, shapes, sizes, and everything. And you have to be a little careful in some cases about just the perspective of, oh, I wouldn't have seen that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's probably plenty of people that just feel like, hey, the fact that we have Instagram and that you've got all of these microphones in essence, what part does that play in some of the decisioning that you have in some ways that's wrapped around the fact that you want to be culturally understanding and relevant, and at the same time, we can't all be so sensitive to everybody who feels the need to just bitch about whatever they complain about whatever they want to complain about sometimes. How do you navigate that all the way up at the level that you're at now?
Yeah, you know, it's such a great question. It's something that we balance and we talk about all the time. For us, we have a core set of values. And so whenever we're sitting here and we're thinking about a discussion that may be controversial,
mm-hmm.
we just look to those core values and say, does it feel in line with that? And would our community really want us to have a voice in that?
Yeah.
And we let that guide where we go. And, you know, there are going to be people who don't agree with some of that. And unfortunately, you know, that's their right. And, you know, they'll choose with their wallets or with their social voice or so forth. But we like to believe that as we continue as a society and push forward with this mindset of just, there's no need to be biased based off of whatever predisposition, whether it be, you know, we have a social influencer who is handicapped.
Okay.
And I saw the post with her, and my immediate thought was like, why don't we have a portion of our site that actually is identifying items that will work specifically for them?
Great idea.
Because that's another form of how people are segregated based off of, you know, something that they don't control.
Sure.
And why should they be put in a corner? And so we really look to that as our guiding light. And, you know, it makes it easier for us because there's no like gray. It really is like, does this feel right, aligned with our vision, aligned with our values? And then we just go.
Yeah. You've got a finance background, and we hit on that just a little bit. And so if you can maybe unpack a tiny bit about how your finance background has been helpful to you from a marketer's perspective.
Yeah. You know, as I tell most people when they hear about my background is I'm actually probably the worst CFO because I love, you know, investing in marketing. I just believe in it so much. And there are times where you sit there and we're actually about to launch on March 10th, little teaser, but I can't tell you too much, our first big national brand
campaign. And this will probably launch, we'll probably air this after March 10th,
okay,
so you're
perfect.
Safe.
Okay, great. So we're launching.
We'll sign an NDA, we swear.
So we're launching a massive brand campaign, you know, multi-million dollar. And the team actually asked me that. They're like, well, how do you get comfortable with justifying that type of investment? And I was like, look, there are certain metrics we can look at, brand awareness, we can look at lift to traffic and so forth. There's also a fundamental belief that I just believe that we need to connect emotionally with these consumers and you know, sometimes you need to reach out beyond and take that risk. And there's, you know, I love performance marketing. You know, it talks to my core of being a math guy, right? Okay, I spend X amount on display. I know how many clicks I'm going to get. I spend X amount in Google.
Yeah.
We spend too much in Google and Facebook, but yes, they're great. But there's also, you know, a component of like, you just got to fundamentally believe because it's so easy and you're just stuck in this hamster wheel of just spending on the same things. And you've got to connect with the consumer through other mediums. And right now, they're getting hit and so many different impressions.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was actually just having this discussion with somebody, and I was like, there's no silver bullet when it comes to marketing anymore. You've got to, you know, hit her or him, whatever industry you're in, 15 to 20 times before you actually get that emotive connection.
Yeah.
And then it's like, how do you build that to where you can actually then connect with a consumer who then becomes your biggest advocate? They become your biggest marketing tool because they're your word of mouth that are bringing in new customers. But it's a combination across all those different spectrums.
So we've got about 10 minutes left. We made it past the 15-minute mark. I told you, Antonio, that you know if we go past 15, it means we're on to something. We've kinda dug into some stuff. And there's always more questions to ask, especially when we've got somebody of your experience level in the suite. I want to spend some of that time maybe with just one or two more questions, if you don't mind. One of which is the fact that, again, you've come through marketing and now you're CEO. How do you interact with your CMO without overstepping into their role?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think this
who is your CMO?
So right now we have a VP of marketing.
Okay, great.
And Mike Janiver, he's an amazing guy.
Yep.
And what it comes down to, and I think this is like equivalent to any functional area, you hire amazing people. And if you hire amazing people and you spend the time invested on, here's the strategy, here's what we're mapping out, overinvest in that, then they know how to go execute. And then what we do is we just connect every week for an hour. We go through assets. But I trust, because like if I hired the right people, then they know what they're doing. And if we're aligned from a strategic perspective, that executes well. And you see it where we're headed. You know, the assets that we're seeing every single time we do a new catalog, I just get more impressed. And we've been able to actually expand the brand. We're actually, since this is going to go after sometime in March.
Knock on wood. We're going to make sure that happens. Go ahead.
Okay, this is, we're going to be launching into Nordstrom, which is, you know, for this brand several years ago would never have been imaginable.
Yeah.
But by challenging the merchandising organization and the marketing to sit there and say, you need to elevate together this merchandise to a level where Nordstrom is going to sit there and say, yes, we want it.
Yeah.
Giving them that energy, giving them the direction, and honestly, get out of the way.
Yeah, like, let them do their thing.
Let great people do great work.
So two more questions, I promise, and then we'll let you get the heck out of here. You came over on a Friday, no less, which is greatly appreciated.
It is sunny in LA, so that's all right.
We've hopped you up on La Croix, for crying out loud. So my last two questions are this. The first part of it is just going to be talk a little about what role agencies play from your perspective. We see a lot of in-housing going on right now, so I want to give you a few minutes to talk about that. And then the last question that I'll ask you is just, what do you wish that you knew more about, and where are you spending your time from a CEO's perspective where you're still touching marketing to spend some time in? So talk about the agency piece to some extent, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so you know, we're actually partnering with Observatory, who we're in the offices that we're in. And
that was not a blatant shill for Observatory, by the way. We ask this a lot more because it's a relevant part. And honestly, agencies want to know. They want to know, like, when you have a CEO, like, well, how does it work? What decisioning process has gone in behind it?
You know, I there's a lot of times where, you know, you work with a lot of smart people. You work with people who are passionate about what they do. And when you're encapsulating your company, you kind of forget about the outside perspectives. You kind of convince yourself you know better.
Yeah.
And so one of the things is not just agency, but even just getting to the customer. One of the things that we're actually launching in our company right now is the fact that all employees will have to do 8 hours of working in one of our stores, because we want them to actually touch and feel the customer.
Yeah.
And not literally touch, but engage. Similarly with an agency. When you're going through and you're ideating about your brand and you're sitting there thinking, okay, I know how to position this, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you need that partner who's going to literally bring a different perspective. And they've seen that across so many different brands. And they've seen like what resonates and what doesn't and what truly is genuine. And so I love that partnership. And some of my favorite meetings is sitting there with my marketing team and the Observatory team and just hearing them like debate like the different things we're trying to do. Because for me, it's definitely a melding of the minds.
Yeah.
And what I respect about like people like Jay and his team is that they are so creative, but then they do a great job of turning that into action, right? And they understand. And I actually don't even look at them as an agency. And I think that's when you know you have the right agency, is that, you know, I pick up the phone, I call him, I know that he's on my team.
It's an extension of your team.
Exactly. And that marriage is critical, because we can't have, like a company our size, can't have a 50-person marketing team.
Sure.
But we can augment it and also actually get really great talent
who
knows the industry, have the right connections that we could never have as one.
And having that outside perspective sometimes keeps you honest.
Totally.
Right?
And you know, Jay, Todd, all the team here at Observatory, what's great is like I'll throw an idea out, and I know they're not going to say, that's a great idea, just because they want to do business.
Yeah.
They'll sit there and be like, Yeah. Okay. Stick to being a finance guy, actually.
All right. Last 5 minutes. Spend some time talking to us about what do you wish you knew more about in this industry?
Oh, man. There's so many countless things. It's evolving so fast. And that's actually what I love about it. What I'd love to know more, actually, is how to get deeper into the consumer's head, right? I think that's the thing. Like, we're constantly talking about, you know, for me, marketing all really distills down to how do you build that emotional connection and really take something that honestly is transactional. You know, I grew up, you know, funny enough, to go even worse, my career was in healthcare. Healthcare is easy in the standpoint of once you have a drug, the customer needs it, they're going to buy it. There's not really a lot of marketing that's required, unless you're selling Viagra, I guess.
I don't know what that is. That's a whole.
I don't know why that one popped in my head.
That's a whole other show.
But in fashion, literally what I love and hate about it is every day you got to fight for your meal.
Yeah.
And every day, you know, I love it, but I also hate it. You know, in pharma, it's like you could take days off because you sell it and it's gone, it's gone, it's gone. So for me, it's like, how do you stay in the cultural zeitgeist? How do you get into her, not just her head, but actually into her heart and that emotional thing that gets her to trigger a decision on why, you know, I want to wear one piece versus another. And, you know, our brand, what we talk about is we're not here to be the brand that tells you, you should look like this because you're wearing our clothes. This is who you represent. And that's like brands of the past, right? What we do is we believe that our role is to accessorize her and give her the tools to create her own self-expression.
And so is the hope from your perspective that you can just continue to try to jump into that? You know, you don't have to necessarily be females to understand a female, right?
But it helps. But
at the same time, I'm sure that you've got a great team of female executives that help surround you and again, great other agencies and other teams that are helping you with that. And so part of it sounds like what you're also hoping over the next year or two to be able to do is, again, whether it's from a female's perspective or a male's perspective, whatever this perspective is, why are we always making the decisions
exactly.
that we make? You know, I bought Allbirds. I bought those shoes,
yep.
right? And so had never heard of them. I like to say that I'm a trend bringer because I bought Allbirds before everybody was buying Allbirds.
Nice.
That's my blatant plug to try to get that CMO on this podcast. I think they've said no once or twice. But the fact of the matter is I love shoes. Instagram knows I love shoes,
yep.
and so they kept pushing me ads, and if I'm going to have to look at an ad, I'd rather look at an ad for something I'm interested in. Lo and behold, ad comes for the, you know, for their shoes. I click on their site. It was very consumer friendly,
yep.
which to me is definitely an important part, and I was like, all right, for however much they were, $38 or $48 or $52 or how much they were, I'll give them a shot, and I love them. They're comfortable as
yeah.
well. So you're willing to pay for comfort as well.
Totally. Well, I think you touched on a couple of great themes there. One is, in today's world, there's so much opportunity or so many different brands that are trying to sell things that the consumer experience has to be seamless. It has to be easy. You know, I remember when, you know, I was at Mockout the first time, there was no competition online. And so, like, the site could be clunky. It could
yeah.
be bad.
Not
you know,
anymore,
like,
right?
horrible experience. The fulfillment could be late. Customers didn't have an alternative. Now it's like you have to be on and your experience has to be in clean, crisp. The customer has to get the message.
It's the Amazon world to some extent, right?
It
Amazon's
is.
Made it so simple. You look at it, you click one click. How do yeah. you navigate around that?
Yeah.
We have a minute and a half. I'm going to stop you from a second from that point only because I want to make sure I just mentioned Amazon. And so how does your brand navigate through that Goliath with your ownership group at this point?
You know, honestly, first and foremost, I think the partnership that we have with Walmart is amazing.
Yeah.
They are great partners. And, you know, they are retail experts. And you know, the capacity and, you know, leverage that they can give you from their scale is phenomenal. And, you know, for me, we don't even think about Amazon.
Yeah.
You know, there's much more important people up at Walmart who do, and they're fighting a great battle there. I think about, like, for us, we have a brand that has a voice and a message. We're not here selling a commoditized product, which is what Amazon's
sure.
really good at. And so I'm more focused on how do I really connect with a consumer and build this emotional connection that really wants her or him actually, you know, to shop with us.
Yeah.
And then I think it's about creating these experiences that actually transcend beyond just like the digital world, which is why like going into stores and creating these
sure.
unique experiences, something that we, you know, Bonobos pioneered in these, you know, inventoryless stores is the wave of the future. And it's about like, how do you really kind of truly build a connection with that consumer?
It is interesting again to see the back and forth, you know, where you have these great online retail brands and then suddenly they're opening storefronts, yeah. you know, as well. The whole mattress, you know, landscape is like that. Well, listen, Antonio, I told you it would be painless. How was that?
That was excruciating.
Fast? Slow?
No, it was great. I actually didn't even realize we were already
On time. So listen, we want to thank Antonio Nieves for joining us on the CMO Suite podcast. Once this episode is over with, of course, we're going to try to hit you up for some swag somewhere along the way.
We'll make it happen.
Thanks, man. I greatly appreciate it. Holly, thank you so much for producing for us. This is going to be a wrap for us for Los Angeles. We want to thank Jay and the team at Observatory for welcoming us out here. We're super excited about this season of the CMO Suite. If you want to find out more about Antonio Nieves, you can find him on LinkedIn. You can stalk him there perhaps from time to time. You can find out more about him on the CMOsuite.com webcast. And Holly, take us out of the show.
Thanks for hanging out in the CMO Suite. The podcast for marketers who want to be in the know. Presented by Connectivity Holdings.